Welcome to the January 2026 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our first podcast of the year with an introduction from IIMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear member and fellow maritime professionals, welcome to 2026 and a happy new year to you and your family. In a turbulent world, may it be a good one for you. IIMS celebrates its 35th anniversary later this year. That's something to be proud of, and as an institute we have come a long way in a little over a third of a century. I was curious to research and discover what a 35th wedding anniversary is known as. To my surprise and delight, I discovered it is referred to as a coral anniversary. The nautical connotations made it seem very appropriate indeed. Last month leading up to the Christmas break flew by. But before the festive period well and truly took hold, IIMS delivered some meaningful training which attracted huge interest and many attendees. I have written a short report about this flurry of activity in this news bulletin for those who were unable to participate. Last year proved to be the busiest travel year for me, and we delivered some excellent conferences and seminars globally. This year offers far fewer long-haul airplane flights for me, thankfully, but no less a commitment to continuing to offer some excellent training opportunities. We will share a more detailed event plan in next month's news bulletin. So, having said I have no plans for extensive travel, there is one exception, early in 2026. I am making the trip to co-host the annual IIMS Baltimore conference to be held at the usual MIT AGS facility on the city's outskirts on Friday 30th and Saturday the 31st of January. As ever, James Randi Wren and Ray Bracken have mined and assembled a great collection of speakers for your benefit. Join us face-to-face or remotely by Zoom. I look forward to seeing some of you there. You can find out more details about the program by heading to our website. In last month's news bulletin, I referenced a number of new international maritime regulations coming into force from January 2026. The list is extensive. Forgive me for particularly highlighting the UK commercial under 24 metres small craft sector for a moment. The MCA's new sport or pleasure vessel code officially came into force on the 12th of December 2025. I have devoted some space to this fresh set of regulations because it marks the biggest shake-up in 25 years in this sector and replaces the long-established document MGN 280, amongst others. The learning curve for the IIMS certifying authority is steep, just as it will be for coding scrutineers, examiners and, of course, vessel owners and operators too. The new code applies immediately to new coded vessels, but existing boats have up to 3 years to become compliant. And finally, I wanted to point you towards Edition 5 of the Safety and Loss Prevention Briefings Compendium, which IIMS has published today. I had rather hoped this year's edition might be considerably smaller than previous years, but sadly we have noticed what seems to have been an unwelcome, sharp increase in the number of incidents and accidents at sea, on rivers and inland waterways in 2025. This publication brings it all together in one place and is available to download now via our website. It really is a sobering read, but it has a place on every marine surveyor's electronic bookshelf, and I recommend it to you. Survey well in 2026. Mike, for our first story, news has reached IIMS that Captain Andrew Moll has announced his retirement as Chief Inspector of Marine Accidents with the Marine Accident Investigation Branch, MAIB, after nearly half a century of unbroken public service. He will formally leave the organisation in February 2026. Andrew Moll joined the MAIB in 2005 as a principal inspector and was deputy chief inspector from 2010 until he took up post as the chief inspector in 2018. He obtained a bachelor's degree in psychology through distance learning while working at the branch in order to improve his understanding of human factors in marine accidents. Prior to joining the MAIB, Andrew served 27 years as a deck officer in the Royal Navy. In a personal statement posted on LinkedIn, Andrew said, "After nearly 49 years of unbroken public service, 21 of those at the MAIB, I have decided it is time to retire. It has been a hard decision to take as I firmly believe that my job is one of the best and most rewarding in the marine industry. Further, it has been a real pleasure to work with so many talented people over the years, and I will definitely miss that. With every door that closes, another opens, and my plan for retirement is to commence a 40-week course at the Boat Building Academy in Lyme Regis Learning, unsurprisingly, to build boats." Andrew is regarded as a friend of IIMS, and we are grateful for the help he has given us and the interest he has shown in the Institute over many years. He will be a hard act to follow. In our second report, the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board said a single loose wire on the Dali container ship caused an electrical blackout that led to the vessel hitting the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which then collapsed, killing six highway workers. At a public meeting, investigators said the loose wire in the ship's electrical system caused a breaker to unexpectedly open, beginning a sequence of events that led to two vessel blackouts and the loss of both propulsion and steering near the 2.37-mile-long Key Bridge on March 26, 2024. Investigators found that wire label banding prevented the wire from being fully inserted into a terminal block spring clamp gate, causing an inadequate connection. After the initial blackout, the Dali's heading began swinging to starboard toward Pier 17 of the Key Bridge. Investigators found that the pilots and the bridge team attempted to change the vessel's trajectory, but the loss of propulsion so close to the bridge rendered their actions ineffective. A substantial portion of the bridge subsequently collapsed into the river, and portions of the pier, deck and truss spans collapsed onto the vessel's bow and forwardmost container bays. A 7-person road maintenance crew and one inspector were on the bridge when the vessel struck. 6 of the highway workers died. The NTSB found that the quick actions of the Dali pilots, shoreside dispatchers and the Maryland Transportation Authority to stop bridge traffic prevented greater loss of life. You can read the full report at www.iamsusa.com. Up next, ABS and Persona AI partnership to bring humanoid robotics to shipyards. The initiative will focus on adapting Persona AI's humanoid robots, based in part on NASA's robotic hand technology, for a range of shipyard tasks. Unlike traditional industrial robots, humanoid robots are uniquely suited to operate in shipyards designed for human workers, offering flexibility and mobility in complex, confined, or ergonomically challenging spaces. For our next segment, safety management system procedures were not effectively implemented when the Spirit of Tasmania 1's second engineer was seriously injured in a fall during engine maintenance last year, said the final report from the Australian Transport Safety Bureau. At about 0600 on the 6th of March 2025, the second engineer of Spirit of Tasmania 1 began a routine oil change on one of the ship's main engine turbochargers. Problems were encountered during the oil change, and it was decided to replace the turbocharger's bearing housing cover plate. This significant change to the scope of work required access to the top of the engine. The second engineer and another engineer on duty then carried out the work, which took longer than expected and required both to climb on and off the engine top several times. At 0815, while climbing off the engine, the second engineer slipped and fell heavily, resulting in serious injury. The ATSB investigation found that, while access to the top of the engine was regularly required, there was no access ladder or platform nor was a standard safe route defined or used. Consequently, the injured second engineer used an unsafe access route along the engine rocker covers at the time of the accident. The investigation also identified that although the shipboard safety management system required that the change of work scope necessitated a review of the job safety analysis and, or completing a new pre-start safety checklist, neither was undertaken due to perceived time pressure and the perception that the work was low risk, resulting in the risk of a fall not being properly considered. In addition, the ATSB found that the JSA procedure was not effectively implemented on board. This resulted in there being no JSA in place for the work being done at the time of the incident. Further, the JSAs covering other work on top of the engine did not address the risks involved in accessing the engine top. You can find the full report at iamsaustralia.com.au. Next, Singapore is the world's leading container port according to a new report published by DNV and Menon Economics. The report compares leading practices of 160 ports against 35 indicators grouped into 5 pillars: enablers, connectivity and customer value, productivity, sustainability, and overall impact. These indicators are based on objective data, such as throughput volumes, berth productivity, emissions per 20-foot equivalent unit, and alternative fuel availability, and are complemented by expert assessments from leading shipping stakeholders. The ranking complements other reports, such as the Leading Maritime Cities of the World report, by providing a focused assessment of container port performance. Global top 5 container ports are as follows. The number 1 spot has been taken by Singapore. Second is Shanghai in China. Third is Ningbo Zhaoshan, China. Fourth is Busan in South Korea and fifth is Rotterdam in Europe. You can download the report via the IIMS website. In our next story, a report regarding a scrap metal fire in the cargo hold of bulk carrier Altai has highlighted the importance of cargo loading monitoring and cargo pre-loading inspection. The UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch has released a preliminary assessment of the incident which took place in June 2025. What happened? On the morning of the 27th of June 2025, the Marshall Islands registered bulk carrier Altai was loading scrap metal into its aft cargo hold at Albert Dock, Hull, England. At 09:48, the master observed smoke rising from the cargo and immediately activated the general alarm and called for the shore grab operator to discharge cargo to remove or expose the source of the fire. The fire was extinguished in the early hours of the 28th of June. There were no injuries and there was no loss of life. Over several days, Altai discharged the contaminated firefighting water from the hold into road tankers for disposal. The scrap cargo was discharged and surveyed to check its composition. On the 14th of July 2025, the ship was surveyed for damage. Significant heat damage was found to structural steelwork in the aft cargo hold. The Maritime and Coast Guard Agency attended and permitted Altai to leave port on the 27th of July and proceed to a dry dock in Turkey for repairs. The fire was likely caused by an undischarged battery or other ignition source, causing a spark during loading that ignited combustible material in the scrap cargo. The scrap cargo had been collected from several sources and the recipient company, the Griffiths Group Limited, expected its suppliers to screen their product to remove hazardous material such as combustibles and batteries. Deliveries of scrap cargo to Hull were visually checked on arrival. There was no additional sorting and screening facility to ensure that contaminants were not present. The cargo had been classified as Group C scrap metal under the International Maritime Solid Bulk Cargoes Code, which did not require the shipper to declare hazard identification and cargo composition. However, the scrap cargo contained hazardous impurities, including batteries, oil drums, and oily residues, which posed a fire risk. You can read the full report on the MAIB's website. Next, Class NK has released PARTA guidelines for ships using alternative fuels, edition 3.0.1. This edition includes supplementary explanations about interpretations of safety requirements for methyl, ethyl alcohol-fueled ships, as well as compiled key points on required plans and documents, and class survey items specifically for such vessels. You can download the guidelines via Class NK's website. In our next segment, the new ABS Retrofits for Energy and Emissions Improvement publication provides insights into best practices, incentive scenarios, and a market update on energy efficiency technologies and retrofits. The report identifies the classification and statutory requirements shipowners and managers must understand before considering retrofitting vessels to use alternative fuels and energy efficiency technologies. You can find the report at iimsusa.com. Up next, a gas tanker had just left its berth at the port of Brisbane when it lost propulsion for 2 minutes as two of its three electrical generators were not properly configured, according to an Australian Transport Safety Bureau final report. On the 15th of March 2025 at 1100 local time, Gas Chem Homer was departing for sea from its berth in the port of Brisbane, Queensland, under the conduct of a harbour pilot. At 11:04, while the ship was being turned towards the port's entrance, it experienced an electrical blackout, resulting in the total loss of propulsion and steering control. About 2 minutes later, the crew restored the electrical power. The incident did not result in damage or injury. The ATSB found that, during departure preparations, the crew had forgotten to switch two of the ship's three generators to automatic mode. As a result, the ship's power management system was unable to automatically distribute electrical load across all generators, restricting generating capacity to only one generator. The increased power demand when the bow thruster was operated during departure maneuvering could not be supported by the single generator and it tripped on overload, causing the blackout. The investigation also identified a safety issue relating to the shipboard safety management system, which had not identified operational risks associated with Gas Chem Homer's electrical installations and implemented effective controls. Procedures were generic and non-informative and there were no other controls in place to prevent such operational lapses resulting in a power failure. This incident highlights the importance of ensuring all risks associated with shipboard operations and critical equipment are identified, assessed and effectively controlled. The safety management system should encompass up-to-date and usable ship-specific procedures, as well as any additional technical controls if procedural barriers alone are insufficient to mitigate risk. You can download the full report via iimsaustralia.com.au. Our next report focuses on the Mediterranean MOU, which published its annual report on port state control in the Mediterranean region for 2024. In the report, it said its 11 member states carried out 5,993 inspections on 4,907 individual ships, and the number of detentions increased by 20% to record 196 detentions in 2024. Out of these inspections, 61% of the inspections recorded with deficiencies. The total number of detainable deficiencies recorded was 1,290 deficiencies, 16% of those deficiencies were related to recognized organizations. The number of deficiencies recorded was 15,156 deficiencies. In 2024, this number decreased by 17% compared with 2023. The most unfavorable deficiency area is certificate and documentation, which recorded 2,327 times during 5,993 inspections in 2024, and the safety of navigation, which was recorded 1,961 times. You can read the full report at www.medmou.org. Next, the Transportation Safety Board of Canada is urging stronger safety measures after a crew member was seriously injured aboard the bulk carrier Golden Zhejiang's lifeboat in 2023. The TSB highlights the need for proper procedures for risk assessments, equipment-specific training, and a safety management system supported by a mature safety culture with a trusted process for communication between crew and shore personnel. On September 2, 2023, the second and fourth engineers were carrying out a weekly safety check of the Golden Zhejiang's free-fall lifeboat, while the vessel was anchored in Trincomalee Channel, British Columbia. During the check, the second engineer encountered an issue while testing the steering from inside the lifeboat and attempted to troubleshoot the problem. In the process, the main release mechanism was inadvertently activated. The sudden drop caused the securing cables to fail, sending the lifeboat into the water with the second engineer inside. As he was not secured in a seat, the second engineer sustained serious injuries. Findings: these are conditions, acts or safety deficiencies that were found to have caused or contributed to this occurrence. The Golden Zhejiang safety management system did not explicitly require a risk assessment before entering the free-fall lifeboat to conduct a safety check. Consequently, the fourth engineer and the second engineer began the weekly safety check without assessing the risks of the boat inadvertently being released. The cables securing the lifeboat to the launching structure were not engineered and certified as load-bearing cables. Consequently, they were not safe for the intended use. When the lifeboat was inadvertently released, the securing cables failed, causing the lifeboat to fall into the water with the second engineer inside. The second engineer was not secured in a seat and was seriously injured during the impact. You can download the full report via iiamscanada.ca. For our next segment, the UKMAIB has released a preliminary report on two persons overboard from the standby safety vessel Voss Tracker during maintenance of the fast rescue craft. At 0800 on the 25th of August 2025, the deck crew of the offshore emergency rescue and response vessel Voss Tracker conducted a toolbox talk to discuss the day's maintenance tasks. Planned work included the replacement of the lifting strops for the two fast rescue craft. The weather was good, with a low swell and light winds from the south, southeast. Although the planned work was initially scheduled for the afternoon, the crew decided to change the FRC lifting strops before midday. A second toolbox talk was held to discuss the strop change. By 11:25, the starboard side FRC strop change was completed without issue. Coxswain A then boarded the port side FRC and disconnected the lifting stops after the bosun had lowered the davit hook. The FRC was now secured to its cradle only by two bosun in pennants forward and aft. Coxswain A then progressed changing the aft lifting strops. At about 11:25, Coxswain B boarded the port FRC to change the forward strops. Coxswain B found that the lifting strop shackle pin was tight and moved aft and outboard in the FRC to collect some tools. In doing so, the combined weight of the two coxswains unbalanced the FRC on its narrow cradle. The FRC tilted, then slipped overboard at 11:35. The carabiner connecting the aft bosun and pennant parted as the FRC skewed and fell. The coxswains jumped into the water and the personal flotation devices automatically inflated. Both narrowly missed being struck by the FRC as it hit the water. The bosun immediately sounded the general alarm, and the master announced man overboard over Voss Tracker's public address system. The crew mustered, lifebuoys were deployed and the starboard side FRC was launched. Meanwhile, Cox and B climbed aboard the portside FRC and it was brought alongside Voss Tracker by the vessel's crew. By 11:44, Cox and A had been recovered from the water into the starboard FRC. Both FRCs were subsequently recovered. The portside FRC had sustained hull damage that required a replacement when Voss Tracker berthed 2 days later. Both coxswains were unharmed in the accident. Findings include that the FRC cradle had a narrow outboard arm, which did not adequately support the FRC when there was the combined weight of two people standing on the outboard side of the FRC. The FRCs were unsecured once the davit hook lifting strops were removed. No risk assessment was in place for the lifting strop change and no permit to work for working at height had been raised as required by the vessel's safety management system. Neither coxswain A nor coxswain B was wearing a safety harness and either a full arrest or full restraint tether while working in the FRC. The toolbox talks for the FRC strop change were ineffective, and evidence suggested that these were a compliance exercise. The successful change of the strops on the starboard side FRC, and previous strop changes in the same manner, had led the crew to believe that their methodology was safe. There was no effective supervision of the task due to distraction and hurried execution to complete the work before the watch changeover at midday. Lloyd's Register have shared an investigation report into two fatalities which resulted from the catastrophic failure of a bellow-type expansion fitting on a steam system pipeline on ALR-class vessel. Subsequent random inspection of vessels with similar expansion fittings as part of their steam piping system have highlighted the following issues. Some expansion fittings have not remained in compliance with the maker's limits for axial misalignment or were found compressed, elongated beyond the maker's recommendation. This has introduced unnecessary stress, without the steam system being under pressure. Some fittings were inaccessible due to being enclosed in permanent lagging. Pipe work was no longer adequately supported, to prevent unnecessary stresses on the fitting. LR have recommended the following should be carried out as soon as possible. Ensure expansion fittings are listed and clearly marked on the steam system plans and inspected regularly to confirm that they remain compliant with maker's limits for misalignment and are not excessively compressed or elongated beyond permitted limits. Check pipe work at both ends of such fittings remains adequately supported to prevent undue stresses at time of installation and allow appropriate movement during service, considering the temperature variation of the pipe work which will cause the pipe work to slide within the support clamps. Where such expansion fittings are not accessible due to insulation or lagging, such inaccessible locations should be identified and the lagging arrangement changed to make it removable for periodic inspection. Check that these fittings remain within their service limits and operational life. The direction of flow should be confirmed in accordance with maker's guidance. Fitting should be compatible with the fluid, in this case steam, for the specific piping system. Read the class news at lr.org. Up next, Britannia P&I Club have cautioned its members on the dangers of entering an enclosed space after a sailor died in the cargo hold of a tanker. On the morning of the incident, the ship was several hours into the passage. At around 10:10 hours, the chief officer instructed four deck ratings to bring mops and rags to the main deck in preparation for mopping operations which were planned to take place inside the washed cargo tanks. At this point, the enclosed space entry permit process had not yet been initiated, and no confirmation had been made that the tank atmosphere was safe. It is understood that the CO had noted a strong smell of cargo residue from within the cargo tanks at deck level and had therefore felt it unnecessary to test the atmosphere as it was clearly still unsafe. Shortly afterwards, one of the ordinary seamen appears to have acted ahead of the authorized sequence. They entered the cargo tank through an open hatch, before the atmosphere had been tested and confirmed safe. It was later discovered that they were not carrying a portable multi-gas detector and was instead wearing a filter-type mask, presumably as protection. The filter-type mask worn offered no protection in an oxygen-deficient space and could not protect against residual benzene or other toxic vapors that might still linger inside the tank. Around 10:35, the bosun, who was walking across the deck, looked down into cargo tank 10 port. Seeing the ordinary seaman lying collapsed on the tank bottom, the bosun immediately raised the alarm. The bridge informed the master, and shipboard emergency response commenced. The CO and second officer donned self-contained breathing apparatus and entered the tank to recover the OS. They fitted the OS with an emergency escape breathing device, but he remained unresponsive. The OS was brought up to deck level on a stretcher and CPR was initiated, with medical support sought from the shore rescue authorities. Despite prolonged resuscitation efforts, the OS did not regain consciousness and was later declared deceased upon handover ashore. The subsequent autopsy identified traumatic injury consistent with a fall onto a hard surface, including cervical spinal fracture, meaning the atmosphere incapacitated the OS before they had reached the bottom. Benzene was detected in the OS's cardiovascular system. Based on this, and the fact that the tank bottom was only accessible by ladder, it was determined that the OS had entered the tank of their own volition, inhaled residual benzene vapors, collapsed inside the tank and fell, sustaining fatal injury. The tank atmosphere had not been tested and confirmed safe prior to entry, and the filter-type mask worn by the OS was not suitable or approved for protection against benzene vapors or oxygen-deficient atmospheres. This event developed rapidly and at a point where the tank had not yet been formally cleared for entry. Until an enclosed space permit is issued, a cargo tank must be treated as hazardous, regardless of whether the hatch is open, a fan is running, or the tank has been recently washed. The purpose of the permit process is to confirm, through measured data and recorded gas testing, that it is safe to proceed. Tanks may look harmless from above yet can still harbor atmospheres that can quickly incapacitate or kill without warning. Therefore, visual appearance from the deck level cannot be relied upon. The atmosphere within a tank can remain dangerous even when it seems inactive or benign. You can find the full report on our website. And for our penultimate report, the Maritime Technologies Forum, MTF, has revealed new guidelines for conducting qualitative risk assessments for alternative fueled ships, HAZID and HAZOP. The use of alternative fuels will be key to addressing the 2023 IMO strategy on reduction of GHG emissions from ships. The new report provides guidelines for conducting qualitative risk assessments as a core component of the approval process for alternative fueled ships. This addresses both HAZID and HAZOP studies, detailing qualification requirements for personnel involved and outlining the procedural steps involved. The guidelines also specify required input documents, reporting requirements, and risk criteria. The guidelines support the identification of potential hazardous events and the development of preventive and mitigative safeguards to manage risks associated with the use of alternative fuels. And for our final report, on the 1st of January 2026, the Marine Casualty Investigation Board, MCIB, was dissolved. From this year, the Marine Accident Investigation Unit will carry out Ireland's statutory marine accident investigations. Any ongoing MCIB investigation will continue to be dealt with and determined by the MCIB investigator concerned or by an MAIU investigator, pursuant to the relevant statutory provisions and modifications. From 2026, notifications of occurrences of marine accidents should be directed to the MAIU by email to info@maiu.gov.ie or by telephone to 0160405778. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.